Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Welcome back, folks. You've heard me talk about emotional intelligence, the ability to manage one's own emotion and the emotions of others. You know the hot button issues to press on the other side. And it seems like in today's climate, we're always pushing those hot button issues, knowing that the outcome is not going to be very pretty and knowing that we're not going to achieve what we actually set out to achieve by having this discourse and working with one another to try and bring forward solutions that matter. So we wonder, you know, how do we communicate today? Joining us is Stefan Padfield. He wrote a commentary, and it's entitled, Can Focused Fighting Increase Unity? Stefan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
And by the way, folks, Stefan is the executive director of the Free Enterprise Project, and I apologize for not pointing that out. Stefan, you say that focused fighting, what does that mean?
So it means a couple of things. First and foremost, it means that we should not deny the fact that there are very serious issues that divide us. And anybody who tries to come forward with a plan for unity that is some version of, hey, if we just talk to each other and understand each other, we'll see that we really don't have any differences and we'll all just, you know, sing kumbaya together. I think that's not realistic. I think we need to be honest about the fact that there are very real issues that divide us. At the same time, I think many of us, and this goes to what I believe you opened with in part, we come into these conversations with essentially straw men built up about the other side. And so we turn what is difficult, which is finding areas that we might cooperate on, we make those impossible because we enter the conversation or even don't bother having the conversation because we've built up all these false beliefs about just how awful the other side is. So we need to have some engagement to get some clarity where exactly we do differ and where there might be some room for engagement. And then probably the third, it's four pieces altogether, but I'll maybe wrap up two of them into one, which is I think we also need to compartmentalize in the sense that many of us are passionate about these issues. We say things that may be offensive to the other side. And for me personally, I am committed to putting that aside. So, for example, I work on shareholder proposals. I'd like to do something with somebody from a leftist organization. I think we can find something that we can agree upon, for example, related to child labor as just one example. And I don't even mind if that organization or that individual has called me a racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, what have you, in the past, and may well do so in the future. I'm willing to put that aside if we can reach for something bigger in the moment in a particular project. And I think those are some elements that are really necessary if we are going to make some progress in a bipartisan way or at least on some bipartisan projects.
Yeah, it's interesting because we, you know, folks come together, they typically representing some constituencies. And if in the the spirit or the art of compromise, you work out with something that's positive to each one of those conspiracies. I mean, constituencies, excuse me, Freudian slip, I guess. You know, you wonder why that's not a good thing and why we can't focus on that. We never get it all. I mean, you know, I always go back to my relationship with my wife, you know, the person that you love more than anyone else on the face of the earth. We don't agree on everything. We're never going to agree. And if you can't agree with that individual, how can you expect for it to happen otherwise? Which begs the question, why can't we compromise?
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the goal here is to turn down the temperature enough so that we can have hope of living together without things erupting into a hot civil war, right? And nobody gets everything they want. One of the issues that has made our rhetoric and our interactions so heated is because so much power has ended up in the hands of the federal government. And so it's become, in a way, our politics have become, in a way, a winner-takes-all politics. There's so much riding on who wins the election for president, who wins Congress, and so on. And so there's not the room to breathe that you might have in more of a federalized system where you might say, okay, even if we lose the big election, right? We have a states' rights system where if it really gets down to it, I can just move. There's this sense that there's no place to go if the other side wins. And so that's just one of the problems. But I think you're absolutely right. The goal is to find ways and areas where we might have win-win solutions. And I really do think there is a tremendous appetite on both sides to find those sort of areas to work together. Now, one of the biggest pushbacks that I've gotten, and I appreciate this and I understand it, is this sense of betrayal and lack of trust, right? Certainly following October 7th 2 years ago, and then certainly following the assassination of Charlie Kirk, we saw such evidence of what I would say is nothing short of demonic behavior coming from the left, in my case, right, being a person of the right, that it's understandable that we might be hesitant to engage with those people who seem to want to kill us, right? But I think the reality is that portion is only a small portion of the group that we might overall define as the left. And I truly do believe that there are people that I will disagree with, that may say things I don't like, that will feel the same way about me, but that we can still find areas to work in. And again, going back to this issue of child labor that I mentioned earlier, we filed a proposal at Tesla dealing with child labor, asking questions about whether enough was being done to be transparent about the risks of that in the supply chain. And we actually worked with someone from the left side of the aisle for the research. And when I met with her the first time, I said, hey, you may not like our position on, 9 out of 10 issues. And she said, I don't care. If you're going to help, increase transparency on this issue, I'll work with you on this project. And I think that's the kind of attitude that we really need to be striving for.
Well, that's, for me, the characteristics of two things, what I call credible leadership and the exhibiting emotional intelligence, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think recognizing the reality of what is possible, right? I think politics is sort of described as that often, right? And then also recognizing, in terms of emotional intelligence, that we are emotional beings. We do say things and do things that are not always representative of our best selves. And so we certainly want some forgiveness for that. And we should give that to others, right? And so again, going back to this idea of, yes, clearly there are going to be some people that you will not be able to, nor will you want to engage with. But that doesn't mean that there aren't people on the other side who we disagree with that we can't find things to work with on. And I think that's the key distinction, right? When I get that reaction where people are like, no, I'm never working with them, and how can you trust them? I try to make clear that I think you're talking about a subset of the group that is, you know, let's say across the aisle, right, divided from us politically. I think there are many more people under that umbrella that are not that radicalized and that are interested in finding some common ground to work on and do want to basically create some hope and a vision that it is possible for us to do so. And I think that's really the focus. And the engagement in part gives you clarity on both, right? If you go and engage with somebody and it turns out that they really do want to do you harm and are going to act in bad faith, well, then you figured that out and you can pivot to something else.
If it's done in a civil nature. We're visiting with Stefan Padfield, Executive Director of the Free Enterprise Project. Stefan, you've been around a long time, and in Louisiana, we really punched above our weight because we had a group of elected officials to Congress who were more center left, center right, and together they collaborated and they almost became like mediators, right, in both the Senate and in the House. And by virtue of that, they gained a lot of power because they would be kind of the go-between or the mediators of the left and the right, and the fringe wasn't nearly as strong at that point in time as it is today, but it was very successful. It worked great for Louisiana, and I think it worked great for the operations of Congress, and it's almost as if both parties ultimately end up resenting that group and went out to basically eliminate it.
Yeah, I think there's some really fascinating calculus that goes into those sorts of decisions in terms of who we're going to support and to what extent we're going to be willing to, you know, seek some middle ground and how we're going to react to people that actually are willing to do that and do that effectively. And certainly, unfortunately, we live in a time where some of that calculus suggests, I mean, in multiple arenas, that you're actually better off leaning towards the extremes, right? And so you almost need to resist that temptation if you want to act in good faith, have that civil discourse, try to find some positive wins. The other thing that I think is critical in this whole conversation is, you know, for myself and others like me, I'm not talking about giving up the fight, right? This is part of the reason I call it focused fighting is because I have every intention of continuing to fight for the things that I believe in and the people that are aligned with me believe in. But I think I can probably devote 1 hour out of the week, every couple of weeks, to try to also do something that is going to be making a positive impact, right, on an issue that both left and right can agree upon. And I think there are actually many such issues if we just take the time to vet them out. There's definitely a lot of headwinds, and we are certainly in a time where, unfortunately, people get rewarded for the more divisive that they are. But we just have to, I think, resist the temptation to give into that, let cooler heads prevail, and really make a commitment, right? I mean, this is what I'm doing personally, is I have put in that article that I am committed to finding someone on the other side to do a proposal with, and express that commitment and stay committed to it, even, you know, when occasionally we fall short here and there or run into obstacles here and there.
You know, what's interesting to me is that we're involved in a debate now as to who has engaged in more political violence. You kind of pointed out some demonic, you know, behavior and causing the lack of trust. But I recognize that you also realize that that's a very small majority of whether or not, minority of whether or not it's on the left or the right. Sometimes I think we lose sight of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think there's a number of ways to frame what we've seen recently. So I think that those people who have at the very least an initial reaction that at least in the past 2 years, let's say, this really seems to be coming predominantly from the left, I think they definitely have a leg to stand on. I also think that the people that point out that, look, regardless of how you divide it left and right, at the end of the day, it's literally like 10 people, right, on some level. I mean, sure, you have the riots that include masses of people, but when you're talking about things like, you know, the killings and the assassinations that we're seeing and assassination attempts, it's the lone wolf individual, and so we really need to keep that in mind. And then if you pull the lens back a little further, then you really do get some sound arguments that, well, basically both sides have engaged in political violence at different times, and so we should probably tap the brakes a little bit when we want to say it's only one side that is causing the problem. So I think it's one of those situations where more than one thing is true at the same time, right? It is true that there are reasons for people on the right to be concerned, but it is is also true that we want to try to avoid going to our own extreme where, again, we completely just, you know, essentially take off the table the possibility of even talking to people who make up half the country, right? Like, that's, to me, I think that's the other side of it is, yes, I understand the distrust, I understand the fear, I understand the anger, and there's a place for that, but I also don't want to put myself in a position where I say, I'm just not going to talk to half the country. I just don't think that's workable.
How much of this do you think plays in? So the landscape is those on the right, those on the left. So someone on the right says something that's incredulous, mystifying. You wonder, where is this coming from? And the same holds true for an individual on the left, that those on the left and those on the right don't call their own party out for this obnoxious, you know, misguided behavior.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, we see at least some evidence of that. So that's something that I think is worth flagging. But there again, there are so many incentives because we live in this winner-take-all world where the sense is I have to back my tribe no matter what, right? I mean, that seems to be very much more a part of the conversation and a part of the perspectives than it certainly has been in my lifetime, right? This sense that even if I disagree with a bunch of things, I simply cannot, you know, sort of undermine my tribe because it's too much is at stake. And so, again, I think this is a temptation. It's understandable, but I also think it is inform a temptation that we need to resist. And if we see things going on from our own side that we think are their own version of extremist, right, and not correct and false and those sorts of things, to be willing to stand up and take some of the flack of raising your hand and saying, look, you know, I mean, I'm on this side, you know, 9 times out of 10, but I think in this particular instance, we're misstating what's going on, right? I think that again takes a commitment, and it's worthwhile, and it's difficult, but it's something again that I think we need to continue to do if ultimately we're going to claim the truth. I mean, that is part of the debate here, right? Is certainly those of us on the right, we often say, look, you know, we are the defenders of the truth. The left is this postmodernist, everything's relative, there is no truth, right? Well, if we're going to claim to be on the side of truth, then we should really call out false statements and bad actions, whether they come from our side or not.
Yeah, and, you know, the interesting thing, I mean, I've been one, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I mean, I'm a Republican. I was an elected official Republican. Endorsed Democrats because I thought the Republican candidate in the race was not a good candidate. And, you know, I was a defrocked Republican on three different occasions. I wear it with as a badge of honor. And I'm not going to shy away from it. I'll continue to do it because we're not always right. In fact, a lot of times we're wrong. And kind of the joke down here in Louisiana is it's easy to vote Republican. It's hard to be a Republican, you know, and because we just don't really spend the appropriate amount of time calling ourselves out sometimes for engaging in idiocracy, and we lose credibility each time, and it's hard to defend. And I would say the same holds true if the Democrats in Louisiana were honest, they would admit to the same thing. But as you pointed out, this kind of zero-sum game, we got to be first to market with certain news and the media and this and that and sound bites. I get the sense that there's a cloud or a smoke screen in front of truth and reality, and we're having a real difficult time seeing through the smoke screen.
And, you know, one of the things that I really want to zero in on that you just mentioned is the more that people see how much diversity of opinion is within one of the tenths, the more likely they are to be willing to reach out and engage, right? Because I'm a person, I grew up basically a leftist. I mean, I think I would have been counted as a card-carrying leftist probably till like 2015, right? And I've done a complete 180. And one of the things that really struck me when I became conservative and said that out loud and started really wanting to learn about the conservative movement and the history is just how varied the perspectives are, you know, under the tent, whether you want to call it Republican, conservative, right, what have you, right? The variety of perspectives that sometimes get as heated, you know, in themselves or against each other as they do against the left, let's say. And I think there's something about not shying away from that, as you say, because it shows that there are different perspectives on this side. And I think the same thing applies to the left. And that all goes back to the reality that, yes, there may well be, and there probably are, people on the other side that you don't want to have anything to do with. But that's only a subset. And there are other people who you can make use of. Have a positive impact, make a positive use of your time by engaging with. And the fact that we have these disagreements with each other under the same tent, I think is actually a good thing in that it reveals the viewpoint diversity that is there on the side.
No doubt. Folks, go to nationalcenter.org and you can find Stefan Padfield's commentary on Can Focus Fighting Increase Unity. Very interesting, Stefan. Thank you so much for joining us. Truly appreciate the time and the insight.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
Thank you, sir. Stefan Padfield, Executive Director of the Free Enterprise Project. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Welcome back, folks. Earlier I said that the Saints game had a 3:25 start. That's what it said on the Saints schedule that went out originally. That game has been changed to a noon start, so I just wanted to make sure that we got that corrected for you. We are joined by Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. Happy to be with you.
Ron, you've been following Congress for a long time. If you don't mind, let us jump into this shutdown. Everyone is predicting that it'll go another week because that is the last paycheck that federal employees will receive at the end of this week. And then I guess the pressure's on, right?
Well, yeah, it will be. And it, you know, this is typical. We've seen this many, many times. Sometimes it's averted. Sometimes it starts and stops. But yeah, there's usually some reason to create some added pressure to resolve it. And I think that's probably what it is. I don't know if anybody, you know, usually nobody wants these shutdowns just to continue. But it's a bargaining chip. And when you have one party controlling Congress and another party wanting things and they can't get anything, they use these must-pass votes as a bargaining chip to get something for it. And we've seen it many, many times before, and apparently we're going to keep seeing it.
Yeah, you know, Ron, you've studied Congress and the history of Congress. And one of their primary responsibilities, I would think, would be to pass a budget and, more importantly, a balanced budget. They haven't done it since, I think, Bill Clinton, if my memory serves me correct. How do we get back on to a process where we're able to do so? Or is this going to be how it's going to be for the next 100 years, concurrent resolutions?
Well, you know, it's a good question because it just seems to go on and on, and nobody or neither party is in a position to change it. But the thing to remember is there really isn't a budget. It's essentially 12 appropriations bills that cover everything, and that's what's important. And that's why it's never balanced. There hasn't been since, like you said, Bill Clinton, because it's not one instrument. And then you have all these supplemental appropriations bills when they need extra money. Like, for instance, after Katrina, most of the assistance that was given to Louisiana and Mississippi came out of supplemental appropriations bills. And they had things like the war in Iraq and everything else in it too. So the so-called quote unquote budget process at the federal government, frankly, is a joke. And they call it that because that's the word closest to what they think they're trying to do, but it really isn't. And it makes no rhyme or reason to it. You know, we went through the whole process, this DOGE process of firing people and closing agencies and all that. And one of the things we talked about at the time was, will this make it through the appropriations process? Will, in the end, you know, the appropriations still be high? It'll just move some money around, but that's it. And again, there's no real plan to get us from where we are with high budget deficits to where we'd like to be, which would be a balanced budget. And there's very little real cutting involved. And anytime there is, you know, somebody in Congress is going to oppose it and fight it and build a constituency against it, make it hard to do. So it, you know, the old saying, you know, the definition of crazy is to keep doing something the same way and expecting a different result. And this is crazy.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I don't even care who's to blame anymore, right? It's just I'm already tired of hearing about it.
Everybody is to blame because one side wants something that the other side won't give them. So, you know, in this case, you know, it's being fought over health care and nobody is making a case to the American people what the health care issue is that they're fighting over. and why it needs to be done as part of this, you know, showdown. So it nobody would have designed the system like this because it really doesn't work. And it's a shame to have to come on a radio show every year and say the same things over and over. But that's in effect what's happening, you know.
No, it's true. It is. And it's, you know, people are, they're so tired. And then we wonder, you know, why we have the apathy that we have, right? Out there relative to voting and government. And, you know, we're in the midst of a very contentious mayoral election, a contentious council races. I mean, you know, very close and there is, and, you know, and you would hope that you'd have a 70% turnout. If it gets to half of that, we'd be lucky.
Right. No, I mean, that's, you know, that's the way it is. That's the way, and it's a game now. You know, the whole thing has become a game because, you know, you're doing the shutdown game, and then they do the debt ceiling game. We have to raise the debt ceiling to pay off the national debt. And it's the same thing. The side that doesn't have the votes to get what they want on the House and Senate floor, use it as a bargaining chip. And it's just that simple, you know. And the other side doesn't want to give, but ultimately people do give. And the giving process can be very sloppy. And it can allow things to pass that maybe they wouldn't have ordinarily passed before. And that, you know, when you have a knife to one another's throats, that's the kind of thing that comes about.
Got a text here. I had to chuckle. What happened to "of the people, by the people, and for the people"? It's a good question.
Well, you don't matter
anymore.
Well, they're the ones who sent these people to Congress.
That's true. That's why you have to investigate the candidates and get out and vote, right?
That's exactly right. And everybody has to take responsibility. Look, it's not the job of the average voter to solve these problems. I mean, half of what's going on, way more than half of what's going on, we don't even see. It's wheeling and dealing back and forth, and the average voter isn't part of that. But it all, you know, you never hear anybody on television anymore say, well, we need to sit down with the other side and work this out because nobody's all right. Nobody's all wrong. Let's get it done. You don't hear that anymore. You just hear Democrats on television say that the Republicans want to destroy health care, and then you want to see the Republicans on television saying the Democrats are destroying the country and they want illegal immigrants to get health care, and it goes back and forth, and you don't even know what's true anymore when it's over with.
You know, it's interesting. I had someone stop me the other day and said, you know, what do you think about this kind of autocratic approach that Donald Trump takes? And I said, well, that's a pretty broad question, but I would kind of sum it up this way. I think it doesn't really matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican. Some do it in an overt way and some do it in a covert way. And I find that every administration engages in it. Just sometimes you find out about it and other times you don't. And I said, under this Trump administration, it seems to me he's more overt. He wants everybody to know that he's pulling the levers. Most others don't want anybody to know that they're pulling the levers. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that is true to some extent. You know, you could make an argument that he's gone way beyond the normal approaches to using power. But one thing that Trump has been doing consistently since his second term started is he, like you said, he wants everybody to know he has the power and to know that he will use it and that he will punish his enemies. And he does that in terms of Congress and domestic politics, foreign policy, foreign trade. The tariff situation is the perfect example of that, that he created issues where the U.S. would have leverage so that he could use the power of the presidency to force other countries to do things that ordinarily they couldn't be forced to do. And you know, there's multiple ways how you could see this if you like what he's doing and if you like the policies that he's pursuing, as most Republicans do and conservatives do, then you're happy about it. If you don't like his policies, you're not. And if you're somewhere in the middle and maybe you like some of his policies, but you don't like the way he uses his power, then you're cross-pressured. And those are the people who will go and determine who wins the election. So he's figured out the power game, and he's figured out how to use it to aggrandize his power. And I think he's been very effective at getting the power. The question is he using it productively, or is it just going from one chaotic situation to another without anything ever really being resolved?
Let's pivot to local elections, a mayoral election, three candidates. Helena Moreno continues to poll somewhere between 49% and 51% of the vote. The other two candidates, Oliver Thomas, Royce DuPlessis, have kind of swapped positions a couple of times, but don't seem to be moving percentage-wise in the polls much at all, which I don't know about you. I found that a little bit strange. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what's happening. The polling I've done showed that over the recent months, with everything going on and people taking shots at her, she kept strengthening and essentially went from about 47% to somewhere between 50 and 52%. And the other polls are showing almost identically the same thing. And so when people ask me, will she win in the primary? My answer is, well, she certainly can. She's polling enough and has been polling enough for some weeks now to win in the primary. But there's always that but, you know,
yeah.
And the but is, you know, basically election day turnout. You know, we've had people voting now early. There's 26,000 votes that have been cast. And then you have everybody go to the polls on October 11th.
Ron, let me interrupt you one second. Would you put that 26,000 vote in context for the listening audience?
Well, first of all, it's 10% of the total registration. The registration is 260,000. So that's 10% of the total registration. But it's roughly a third of the number of people who voted last time in the mayor's election. And the turnout in the last few mayor's elections was very, very low. So in the last governor's election, it was very low here at Orleans Parish. So you've got these important elections and the turnouts are low. It's always hard to use the early voting as a predictor of the final vote and the final turnout. Everybody tries to do it. We all look at it and try to do it, but you can't always tell where it goes and what it means. And a lot of it has to do with what else is on the ballot. If you have a federal election on the ballot that's going on in addition to a state or local election, it can have a ramification that's different than if you have just the city election as we have this time. So anyway, it's hard to tell. And you know, ultimately, I look at election day turnout as something that happens, not something that's about to happen, because it really depends who votes in election
right.
day turnout, and not necessarily the number of votes cast, but the number of votes cast by different groups, whether it's Republicans and Democrats or African Americans or whites or people who are neither white nor black, people who live in this city council district where there's a local council race, or city, you know, people live in another where there isn't. All these things can affect turnout. And right now, it from here on out, it's a turnout game. If we had talked a week or two ago, we would have talked about, you know, what will the candidates do in the end? What will Duplessis and Oliver Thomas do to try to tighten up the lead that Helena Moreno has? And, of course, now it's gotten just about too late for that. You know, the next couple
5 days.
Sure. Yeah. You could still have some activity, but for all practical purposes, the election is getting set very quickly. So,
well, I think you would agree that the present mayor has left a landscape for whoever is fortunate or, depending on your point of view, unfortunate enough to win as mayor of the city of New Orleans. That job is getting, it seems, more and more difficult by the day.
Well, it is. And the next mayor, number one, is going to have to fill the deficit hole that all of a sudden we find there is, even though the city's been floating in money, federal money, for some time now. And secondly, the next mayor, whether he or she likes it or not, they have to fix city services. They have to fix the operations of government. Because if they don't, they're going to have an increasingly big mess on their hands.
Well, they're going to have a public that's not going to be... I don't know that there's going to be a long honeymoon period for any of these folks, if they're fortunate enough to win.
I think the voters expect action very quickly.
Absolutely. As always, we truly appreciate your time, your insight. Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Have a great week.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Okunor Jewelers talk and text lines.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
You open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll talk about the government shutdown, what it's going to cost us. It actually impacts GDP. It impacts a lot of other things as well. We'll talk about flood insurance options during the shutdown, the job market, Katrina success story and talk about other issues as well. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Guy Williams. This is Newell on WWL.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.